One of the questions that comes up quite often people often ask how do I decide what to do with my life? What's the right thing for me to do? What should I do, Ajahn? What's the right thing for me to do? And our feeling of facing the unknown, being in the midst of many possibilities and not knowing, you know, what to do, what's the right choice to make, what's the right way forward. This is in greater or smaller ways for most people. This is something that we experience at different times in our life. Yeah, that the meeting with this feeling of the unknown, the sense of doubt, not sure. And this can be something that turns into a major problem for us, a sense of not knowing, and that insecurity, uncertainty becomes like a terrible enemy for us, saps all our energy and brings a state of distress and fear, in a state of feeling threatened, unsteady, insecure, unstable. And so there's a longing in the heart for some kind of stability, some kind of certainty, some sort of safe place, some sort of solid ground, something that will tell us, this is the right thing to do. Now you know, here it is. It's like here in this envelope is the formula for your life. This is what you should do, especially crafted to your particular karmic conditions. Here's the list. And even though it's slightly ridiculous on some levels, we also, something in us is longing for that. There's this feeling that there is this mysterious right thing for me to do. There is the right way, the right thing. And that if I just knew what that was, I could just discover it, then I'd be happy to do it. You know, I'd be glad to do it. But if I just knew that it was the right thing, and if I could be sure of that, I would be happy, I would be secure, I would be at home, at ease. So, and this is very, very natural and understandable for us. I certainly experienced a huge amount of that. When I was younger, through most of my teens and twenties, well into monastic life, I found myself, with strong feelings of insecurity, instability. I remember one time Ajahn Sumedho saying to me, I made some sort of comment along these lines, and he said, "Yeah, but you always seem so confident, Venerable." And I said, "Yes, but I'm. Oh, that's on the outside. On the inside, I'm broken into a million pieces." So it's got a very solid bag that contains all the broken pieces. So we can feel like this sense of the unknown as an enemy, as something that's to be escaped from, that is the biggest threat and difficulty. And so it's natural enough for us to find or search for all sorts of different ways to get away from that, to come up with a plan. We make lists and plans. We kind of figure out what's the right thing to do just by calculating all our lists of pros and cons. We have a belief. We find an authority that will say, this is what you should do. This is the right thing. You should do it. And if they speak with enough confidence and they're sufficiently domineering or they're sufficiently compelling, that I know exactly. I know exactly what the right thing for you to do is. I know your nature. I know your entire karmic background. I know that the path that lies before you, this is it, this is what you should do, trust me. And you think, oh great, this is great. And so we can believe in somebody or a scripture, there in the Tripitaka or the Quran or the Bible or in the Communist Manifesto or the Anarchist's Handbook, you know. The small is beautiful, whatever it might be, we can, this is it, this is the map, okay, here's an authority. This authority tells me what to do. That makes me feel much better. So I can hand over the responsibility. They're confident. They know what they're doing. They have no doubt whatsoever. So I'll just tuck in behind this one and just obey. Great. So we find an external form of authority in a person or a teaching, a philosophy. And it's certainly true. When we believe somebody else, or we pick up a philosophy that can explain everything, that can account for everything, and gives a clear direction what to do, what's the important thing to do with your life, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, there's a certain degree of comfort. Absolutely, that's not to be denied. Or we can take much more sort of immediate and palliative approaches, such as I just want to be distracted. I just want to not feel this insecure feeling. So if I just get drunk, or if I just, you know, watch a movie, if I just go on holiday, if I just absorb into this next project, I busy myself with working on this piece of software, or I take up a challenge, decide to learn carpentry, or teach myself French or Spanish or Swahili. That'll do it. Some nice object to absorb into, just to create a diversionary tactic, to put the mind somewhere else. Either short term, just with listening to a piece of music or watching a movie, or longer term, take on a project, take on a romance, take on a monastic life. That's what I'll do. These, you know, the monks of the Bhayagiri, they know what they're doing. It's got a nice solid form, it's all spelt out. The Buddha says, this is right, that's wrong, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. Great. I'd have to figure it out and decide for myself. I could just tie myself to this bunch because they really know. Look at those guys, they all just, that's it, this way is forward, that way is back, just stick with this, and it's all clearly signposted. Even the trails in the forest, they have signposts on them. This is the way to the main house, this is the loop trail, this is Jordan's Meadows, this is up, this is down, you know. And that it can be very comforting. I mean, it's not saying that there's no value in that, obviously. I mean, I'm part of the business myself, but it can sometimes simply be because of the clarity with which something is spelled out, or the strength of commitment that people display, that we feel drawn just because it helps to offset that nebulous, uncertain, insecure, painful, don't know, not sure, what's happening, who am I, what's real, which way is forward, who wants to know anyway. And just having that, you know, nice, secure, well-defined object then offsets, it gives an alternative to that, to our mind, so we don't have to experience that feeling. And we feel a sense of relief. We feel a sense of comfort. A sense of order in the universe. And that the heart is relieved. And so that they were temporarily protected or feel secure. Or we feel happy. It's rather like the the effect that like most of the forest monastics have remarked upon, is that when you're out living in a remote forest, some kind of dense jungle with all sorts of loud animal noises going on, going off around you, happening all around you in the forest, and you know that there's tigers and wild boar and other dangerous creatures around, snakes and such like. When you sit in underneath your mosquito net, if you feel extremely vulnerable, there's nothing protecting you. Any tiger can come along, and the mosquito net is not even going to slow down. The swipe, it takes your head off with a single swat. But if you have a candle, you light a candle inside the cylinder of your mosquito net, you feel incredibly secure. It's like this little circle of light. And even though the forest is still there, all the creatures, they haven't gone away, they're all still there. In fact, maybe the light draws them to you. But you feel like, okay, everything's fine, I can see. Well, you can only see like 2 feet. But just the very fact that you can see that far, and that there's this, and even though the net is only not even a millimeter thick, it's just a thin, filmy thing, but it just gives you this illusion of this nice wall all around you, and within that space, you can see what's going on. Okay, now I know, I'm fine. And it does, it brings a sense of security, and then if you blow the candle out, then nothing but the dark and the dense jungle filled with hungry creatures. It's easy, so it's easy in many ways just to relate to the unknown as this tremendous threat, as the enemy, as the unwanted, as that which is dangerous and harmful. So we pursue all these different ways just to stave that off, just to not have that feeling of insecurity, of uncertainty. Which is instinctive enough. I mean, fear is an uncomfortable feeling, so we'll get our bodies out of the place where there is a threat. This is why, as I often point out, that those of our ancestors that didn't experience fear, or for whom fear was not a particularly unpleasant feeling, they were the ones that got eaten. They were the ones that the rocks fell on. It was the ones who were standing under the cliff and got anxious and moved out of the way. They were the ones that survived. Those are the deep end of the gene pool. The ones that weren't afraid ended up as somebody's lunch. Fell off the cliff. Got dropped on from a great height. So fear is supposed to be unpleasant. It's supposed to be uncomfortable. That's its purpose. So that we'll get ourselves to a place where that danger is not. So it's natural enough for us to feel that experience. And it's certainly true. The universe is an extremely uncertain, unstable, unpredictable presence. Everything is uncertain. Sabbe sankhara anicca. All sankharas are uncertain, unstable, transient. So that's the fact. That's the fact of nature. But there are different ways that we can relate to this quality of uncertainty and that feeling of doubt or the unknown. And rather than just looking upon it as intrinsically our enemy or something that is harmful, when we change our vision or that we change the attitude, we begin to see that actually the unknown, the mystery of things, is our greatest friend. It's a tremendous resource and a great blessing if we handle that in the right way. The Buddha and in many places in his teachings, and also the teachers of our current times, particularly Lumpo Cha, Lumpo Sumato, and would stress this that the essence of wisdom, the development of wisdom, the development of the true attunement of the heart to Dhamma, awakening to the nature of Dhamma, comes through the very apprehension of this exact same quality of uncertainty, the instability, and unpredictability, the unknown mysterious quality of the universe, of the nature of our mind, the nature of our life. But what is different, or what's the crucial piece, is the way that it's related to. And what we notice is that the stronger the sense of I, the stronger the feeling of self, then when the experience of uncertainty is known or is felt, the stronger the feeling of I, the more that the result of that is a sense of threat or danger or painfulness. When instead there's an appreciation of that very same uncertainty, instability, transiency, from a place of selflessness, of clear seeing, then that the appreciation of uncertainty has the opposite effect. There's a quality of liberation, of ease, of unboundedness, unfetteredness, experience of delight. Because the problem is always with the uncertain or the unknown is that we are trying to establish a feeling of certainty or a feeling of security in that which is intrinsically insecure. We try to find contentment or certainty by having a plan or having a map. You know, I know where we are, I've got the map, you know, I know what's going to happen, I've got the plan, you know, we've got the route worked out, you know. Tomorrow morning we leave at 5:30, then we'll drive down to the city, and then we get to Scott's apartment, and then he's going to offer the meal, and then take the van to the airport and drop off Ajahn Siddhanta and Karuna Dhammo. We've got a plan, we know what's going to happen, then they're going to get on a plane, and the plane will take them to Portland, and then I'll go to Berkeley, and then stay at the Berkeley Monastery, etc., etc. Got a plan, we know what's going to happen. But of course we haven't got a clue what's going to happen, really. But we have a plan, capital P, so that makes us feel secure and certain, okay. We know. But if we're looking for certainty in that which is intrinsically uncertain, or stability in that which is intrinsically unstable, if that's where we make our refuge, then, of course, that has to generate an undercurrent of terror, of fear, of anxiety. Oh, it's not going to work that way. It's not going to happen. Oh, what happens if it goes wrong? What happens if we don't get there? What happens if the plane? What happens if there's a storm? What happens if... What happens? What happens? What? And then the heart splutters and struggles and murmurs and thrashes. Dukkha. Suffering. So, how uncertainty is our friend is in consciously, deliberately turning the attention to that, to look at life, to look at our experience, and to fully acknowledge, but from a place of selflessness, from a place of wisdom, a place of not seeking security in the insecure. So it's on the one level it's threatening, it's letting go of the sense of palliative comfort that we get from having a plan or having an authority or having a a map or a text or a scripture or a, you know, or a community that says, this is the right thing, that's the wrong thing, do this, this is the right way, this is good, that's bad. So it's like deliberately acknowledging that, you know, that all of that is relative, dependent, uncertain, unstable. It's not a secure or a certain thing. So we're consciously letting go of that, those superficial forms of security or certainty, acknowledging that they are limited, they're not dependent, they're not reliable, they're not absolute. So we're it's like a deliberate and conscious disavowal of those aspects of the five khandhas of the mental and physical world as a refuge, as a safe place, as a stable quality. Consciously not looking for it there and opening the heart to the fact that, yeah, this is uncertain, it's not stable, everything is changing, everything is uncertain. Even my judgments, my opinions, my view of things is unstable. It's not a sure thing that this judgment is correct. But the mysterious element that comes from this is that when we turn towards the conditioned world, when the heart turns towards the world of form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, it turns towards the conditioned realm and says and recognizes that's the fact. This is not like news or some kind of terrible happenstance. It's always been this way. It always will be this way. This is its nature. Nothing's going wrong here. This is how it's built. Then in that moment the heart's in accord with Dhamma, and that very apprehension of it then and the abandoning of the search for some kind of stable spot within it, some kind of safe space within it, some kind of dependable support in it, that letting go of that, the abandoning of that, then brings the heart to the stability of the Dhamma itself. So that it's in that relinquishing of looking for certainty where none can be found, that in this mysterious and ironic way we actually find certainty. But it's certainty of a transcendent nature, it's certainty of the Dhamma, of the fundamental nature of the way things are. So in this effort to turn towards our thoughts, our feelings, our perceptions, the nature of the world, and to allow that in, to allow that undefinability, that instability, to allow that in, to truly appreciate that. And as Ajahn Chah would say in one of his well-known Dhamma talks that's entitled Not Sure, The Standard of the Noble Ones, and he expands upon this theme that this is the noble vision. The eye of Dhamma is that which sees uncertainty in all things. He says this is seeing the Dhamma, is seeing that everything is uncertain. If you call it a thing, then it's uncertain, because the way that you see a thing, the way I see a thing, we see different things. We don't just see the same thing from a different angle, but it's a different thing, because the thingness is ascribed to experience because of the conditioning of the experiencer. You know, I call this, you know, a microphone. You know, maybe the little mites and carpet lice that live upon it call it Safeways. So it's where all the food is, so they happily crawl around in there. This I call that carpet, and there could be, you know, whole metropolises, whole colonies of creatures living lives, developing empires, warring with each other, developing whole modes of living, alternative technologies. Over the last 50 years of this life of this carpet, you know, that totally unaware that there's these other big blobs of protoplasm that say carpet. And they refer to what is their own universe. Which one's right? Is it my human view that's right, or is it the little mite, the dust mite, Is the view of the Dasmite right? Which one's the real one? Which one's true? Or when we take the trouble to acknowledge our perceptions, our feelings, and the sense of self, and the sense of the world, and we bring that vision to it, and we, rather than fearfully running away and staving off that feeling of uncertainty, we actually pick it up and employ it and develop it and say, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do with my life. I don't know what the right way is. I don't know what this thing is. I know that you can't define what anything really is. I know that. Marvelous. No one can really say what anything actually, truly, and absolutely is. Great. Because we're not looking for definition or security or stability or a reliability in that kind of form. And it's a strange way that by relinquishing that, by not looking for it there, we find that quality of being at home, that quality of orderliness, Dhamma Niyamata, following the orderliness of the Dhamma, Dhamma Titata, that things are established in Dhamma, Dhammata, they are of the nature of Dhamma, they are established in Dhamma, they follow the laws of Dhamma, Dhamma Niyamata, they function according to the ways of nature. And so that in that that true apprehension of them, that allowing them to be seen, to know, to be known, to be apprehended as they are, no longer looking for happiness where in that which cannot satisfy, no longer looking for self or ownership of things that cannot be owned, no longer looking for stability in that which is intrinsically unstable. In that moment of letting go of these impossible things, then we find the possible, that we find the actual, that here is the quality of nature itself, the nature, fundamental reality of this body, this mind, this world. And the heart, in that moment of letting go, of non-clinging, is automatically attuned to that. And the more fully the heart lets go of trying to find solidity in an unsolid world, and relinquishes that effort, a solid me that's separate and independent, then there's that quality of certainty, of stability, of ease is found, but not through holding on to a thing or defining ourselves as a thing or defining the world or our life as a thing, but simply because of the heart knowing the Dhamma, being attuned to the Dhamma. But then in terms of so what we do and how we function, then we on the practical level, we're faced with unpredictability. You know, like when you're out hiking or you're on a journey, sometimes, you know, the way things go don't go according to plan. Sometimes you're diligently following the map, and you know you're carefully tracking all of the paths, and you're staying oriented correctly according to where the streams are, where the hills are, and then you find yourself in this completely weird place. And how did we get here? Well, that was the village was 2 miles back there, and then here's the hill, and here's the creek, and there's the road junction, but that's not what it says on the map. And then what you can sometimes realize is, oh look, the map's wrong. Look at that. We were having faith in the map, but actually the map's got a mistake on it. Oh, isn't that interesting? where you find that, oh no, this was, the map is correct, they just changed the landscape. The road used to be there. They've now, the map is correct, but they just built a bridge since the map was printed. And the road goes somewhere else. Oh, look at that. So sometimes the map has changed, sometimes the world has changed. And sometimes you just walk in circles. You know, I certainly have done that on the various Tudong journeys I've done in the past. You feel you're very diligently and carefully and accurately following the map and going according to the prescribed route, and then suddenly, that gate looks really familiar. That five-bar gate, that's just like the one that we passed about an hour and a half ago. It's a curious coincidence. Well, it's made by the same company. I remember that label. Oh, it's got a piece of cow parsley growing right beside it, just like the other one did. Oh, look, and there's that telegraph pole. It's very slowly it dawns on you. Oh, look, you've gone around in circles. So then, when we realize, oh, look, we walk around in circles, or we're not in a place where the map dictates, you know, we can get upset, we can say, how can they do this? This is stupid, they've printed the map wrong, or, you know, how can we get an old map, or, you know, they should say they've rerouted the road, or, you're supposed to be the map reader, don't you know what you're doing? How can you lead us around in circles? It's hot and sticky, and, you know, we've got places to get to, and, or, I'm the map reader, how could I do that? We can get indignant, we can get regretful, we can blame ourselves, blame others, we can rail against the way the world is. Or we can keep taking refuge in that quality of openness and flexibility, and like, oh well, look at that, we've gone the wrong way. Or we can be determined to be right, you know, well, you know, and keep telling ourselves that you know, interpreting the map and the landscape in such a way that we know I can't be wrong, we've got to keep going. So there's a wonderful Native American expression or saying that I like to quote, which is, no matter how far you've gone down the wrong path, when you find out, turn back. Because of that feeling, well, we've gone all this way, I don't want to waste all this effort that we've made, you know, we should keep going. You know, when you find out, oh look, this is the wrong way. Okay, turn around or cut across country. So we find that we're able to make those adaptations. We're able to kind of fail on a worldly level and get it completely wrong. And we're able to adapt to that. Sometimes you recognize, oh, well, we want to go north, but in order to go north, we have to go south. Oh, okay, well, we shouldn't be resistant to that. If you need to go south to get down to the bridge and then across the river, then to go north, okay. We want to go north, but we go south. This achieves our goal. So we find ourselves in an adaptable, responsive relationship to the universe, to life itself, that we're ready to work with the conditions as we experience them, rather than just judging them how they fit with our plan, with our expectations, with my, you know, ego needs, that I always need to be right, or that we're judging others about, you know, how they should be. But there's that readiness to adjust, to adapt, and just to say, well, okay, well, we had this plan that we were going to get to the airport, but, you know, the axle on the van is broken, and here we are, and we're beside the freeway. The plane is going. Okay, well, it's not that plane that we're going to be catching. And we realize that if there's that adaptability and readiness to acknowledge that we're not taking refuge in catching a particular flight or having a particular way that we are seen, or that we see others, or a thing that we're doing, or a place that we're getting to, or an activity that must happen, then we don't create suffering out of life. We're not taking refuge in a particular program or a particular state of mind that others are in or we are in. We're ready to be with life as its changes occur. There's an openness a readiness. Well, nothing can go wrong in life. It's all still functioning according to Dhamma. It's just not what I expected. Even if it's a car coming across the central reservation at you, and you think, well, I've got a second left to live. It's like, okay, well, guess we're not getting to the airport. Get ready. This is that we're actually in Act 5 after all. I thought I was on my way somewhere, but plans have changed. Get ready. So this is why the unknown, or that quality of uncertainty, not sureness, is our greatest friend. Because when we employ it, we apply it, we allow that those uncertainties of life, those questions, just to hover. We don't push them away, we don't suppress them, we don't run from them, we don't feel we have to placate them with a whole list of answers and reasons. But just to say, just to hold that up, say, don't know. Will we get there? Are we going to arrive? What's the purpose of this? Don't know. Can't define it. Then we're conscious of the potentialities of each moment, each situation, but we're not limiting it. We're not limiting any potential, any situation that we experience just to the way that I happen to see it. What about the way that the others in this room see it? What about the way the others in the car see it, in this world see it, in this group? What's their view? What's their experience? What's their thing? And that very openness and their seeing, readiness to see that the way that my mind defines it, it's not the only way. It's not a sure thing that this is beautiful or ugly or right or wrong. Not sure. Don't know. Mainair. That simple stepping back doesn't mean that it's not a kind of abdication from all responsibility. It's not a kind of foolish passivity or numbness. There's an attunement to the situation as an apprehension of it, but not fixing it in a particular rigid way. So the heart becomes responsive rather than reactive. We're able to work with life as we experience it. And then the refuge is developed, the refuge in Buddha, in the being the one who knows, being that very knowing. Refuge in Dhamma, the way things are. The heart is attuned to the way things actually are. Refuge in Sangha, the capacity to be radically unselfish, unself-concerned, free of self-concern. To harmonize with others, to commune with others, with the world. So I offer these thoughts for reflection this evening.